Hello everybody and welcome to our plenary session, the title of which is Debt, Default and Banking System Design. My name is Fiona Muldoon, I'm Director of Credit Institutions and Insurance Supervision at the Central Bank of Ireland, and I'm delighted to be here today to chair this plenary session. Our first speaker today is Gregory Connor. He is Professor of Finance at NUI Maynooth since 2008. Prior to that, he was Professor of Finance at the London School of Economics. He remains a Research Associate in the LSE's Research Centre Capital Markets Group. He has taught at the Haas School of Business in the University of California, Berkeley, and at the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern. Professor Connor's interests are in portfolio risk analysis and related econometrics, including particularly factor modelling. He is widely published in many prestigious economic journals, and he is going to talk to us today on an economic perspective on the value of Irish bank assets.
Thank you very much. Thanks for coming, everyone. This little talk is something that interested me. I hope it'll interest you. Basically, it's joint work with Conor McQuilla of Davies, and we're looking at a slightly different way to value banks. We're looking at an economic approach that is present discounted value of cash flows using the bank's risk-adjusted cost of capital. And we'll compare that to alternative ways to measure bank value, in particular accounting-based methods, okay, and regulatory methods, market price of assets method. And then we'll say, well, what about this economic approach and what does it provide for us? It does have value. We're going to apply it to two parts of the bank's asset base. We're going to look at tracker mortgages and give a, this is really why I wrote this, started this idea and brought it to Connell. We're going to give you present value of the cost associated with the tracker rate misalignment. Then we're going to do the same thing for mortgage default, which, you know, there's been an explosion of mortgage defaults in Ireland. And again, we're going to try to not look at all the components, restructuring, repossession, forgiveness, but we're just going to bring them all together and say, what's the economic present value cost of this? We're then going to add up these pieces and see, say, what does it tell us about the banking system? What are its prospects? What's its likely behavior? And then reach some conclusions. I'm going to be good to Kieran and Colin here. I have a lot to say. I'm going to skip five because we have four speakers. I wrote this with the plan for three speakers. But I'm glad to have these very distinguished guys who are going to do the hard lifting after me. So here are these four approaches to value. The one that's used most heavily, of course, is accounting value. It has a lot of advantages. It's rule-based. It's conservative. That means you know what you're getting, presumably. And it's less flexible, but that inflexibility means it's less able to be manipulated. So there's strengths to accounting valuation. But there's also weaknesses. It can't impound all currently available information. So we know this is the value of bank assets using book value. We also know it's likely to shrink. Well, that's kind of irrational from the perspective of current knowledge valuation. It also doesn't always work, and actually probably banks worse than usually in terms of across industries. Accounting valuation of banks probably is particularly bad. A good example is Lehman Brothers in September 2008. It had almost three times the appropriate level of equity, that is, asset value minus non-equity liabilities, and everyone knew it was insolvent, okay? And it went bankrupt at the end of the month. So that shows, that's just one illustration of many. There are real problems with accounting value. Not, it has advantages and disadvantages, but it does have some weaknesses. What's the alternative? Well, the other end, of course, is market value. Just find out all the assets in the bank's balance sheet, test the market or get comparative sales of assets, add it all up. That's another way. That does give you currently impounded information, but it violates banking theory. The idea of a bank is it's an institution which holds assets for long-term cash flow, which can't be sold for full value, either because of monitoring costs of the clients or information asymmetries which prevent the assets from being sold, or just market illiquidity. So banking theory tells us sale price of bank assets, except for things like trading book assets, is not an appropriate measure. So it works in some limited cases, but it grossly undervalues, and it actually works worse than accounting value for Irish banks, because it gives ridiculously low numbers. Who's going to buy Irish bank assets? I'm not talking about covered bonds, but actual sale of assets. You don't get good value. So this does not work in our application. There's another alternative, regulatory value. Here we have flexibility. It's like an accounting-based measure, but the regulator has flexibility to look at stress scenarios and get values under stress. So you add flexibility to accounting value, and this gives you another measure of value. This does have the advantage of flexibility. It can impound all available information, but that flexibility comes at some cost. We can't always trust it. This is actually from the last DEW. I think this might have been you, Colm. I'm not sure who it was. Is this you? The 2014 EU banking sector stress test will be manipulated to produce a bank capital shortfall that does not require too large a capital injection.
It could have been.
It was one of the guys in the front. I don't know who it was. I was just listening. But you can see there's strengths and weaknesses to regulatory valuation. So that brings us to the alternative. Why not just present discounted value of cash flows? It's like market value. It fully impounds all information, okay? But it doesn't take things off. It doesn't discount for monitoring costs, adverse selection, which prevents the sale of Irish bank assets, because obviously they're heavily discounted. If they're sold, they're more efficiently utilized by the bank than they would be by an external purchaser, and there's also market illiquidity. So we're going to get a number which is going to be bigger than market value, but probably smaller than accounting value. Okay, that's kind of roughly what we're doing here. It also is consistent with asset pricing theory. If you're an economist, you like that. This is a asset pricing theory, consistent measure of value. We're not imposing Modigliani Miller. We're just imposing bank cost of capital. Okay. So I'm going to apply this first to the tracker mortgage rate misalignment. Well, we have freely sold securities, which are standard variable rate mortgages, which are no riskier than trackers. In fact, they're less risky. We're going to treat them as of the same risk. Okay, so we're going to say our trackers have no more nor less risk than newly issued standard variable rate mortgages. We're then going to infer the cost of capital in standard variable rate mortgages and apply it to the tracker book. Okay? So here we're going to use the Bank of Ireland. We got this from marketing literature. They're offering 4.3% standard variable rate for high down payment mortgages. We're going to assume there's no excess profit, that these are profitable mortgages, but the banks are not jumping all over the place, thrilled to issue them. They're getting economic level of expected profitability given the cost of their risk capital, but no more. So they're not super profitable, they're just competitively profitable. Okay? That allows us to set their price equal to their present value and back out the internal rate of return, the risk premia that these mortgages are being sold at. Okay? So we need to start with a risk-free rate. We just download it from the ECB website. It starts in month three. They don't give this is AAA sovereign bonds. They don't give the first 3 months, so we plug in the ECB rate for the first 3 months. Okay? And just link the two. Then note we use this term structure to infer not only the long rates, but we also infer the expected short rate. So we apply unbiased expectations hypothesis. The expected ECB rate is the forward rate that's implied by the long rates. And if you don't know how to do that, just come out to Maynooth and you can take my course. So here's the results. These are the inputs. This is just downloaded from the ECB website. Then you have the 1 month, the ECB rate, the expected ECB rates, the expected 2 year rates. We assume that the standard variable rate tracks the 2 year rate. The trackers track the 1 month rate. Okay, here's the expected interest rates for the trackers. We then use that and get the expected payments just from full interest plus payment mortgage formula. We then do the same thing for the trackers, for the standard variable rates, and from that we infer the cost of capital. And you can see here the cost of capital has a premium. In other words, the banks have a risk premium over the sovereign AAA rate of 3.95%, which I think is reasonable.
20 years or so.
This is 20 years. We assume the mortgages are 20-year mortgages. Okay, so it might disappear. It came out of nowhere, so maybe the tracker misalignment will disappear. No one knows. Everyone was shocked when it arrived. Maybe we'll all be shocked when it disappears. So I allow for that possibility. Maybe it will go away in X years, where it could be 5, 10, 15. After that, I let there be no additional cost associated with trackers. Why that would happen, I don't know. Maybe, you know, Enda Kenny will negotiate them away and the ECB will buy them all or something. So here's what you get. And I was interested here. This is really what got me calling Connell about this. You're basically, in terms of the asset base of the banking sector, it's about 3% of the asset base is absorbed in tracker losses. It's pretty big. If you think of a typical bank having about 6% equity to assets, about half of a typical bank's equity is burned by tracker rate misalignment. So it's a pretty big loss. It's a little bigger than I thought it would be. Okay. In terms of the per mortgage, well, it's around 15-18% of mortgage value is eliminated by the rate misalignment.
This is for the Bank of Ireland.
Oh, this is no, only the cost of, yes, the cost of capital is the Bank of Ireland's cost of capital. We use that because it was only, you know, the only privately owned bank. But I don't think it would differ if you use the other banks, assuming that they're issuing mortgages at their cost of capital.
They've got different amounts of trackers, though.
Oh, yes. No, this is, sorry. No, good point. I'm sorry. This is for the whole banking sector. And I took out a slide to save time. This is Bank of Ireland, PTSB, and AIB. It's
okay.
We stripped out IBRC. It's domestic headquartered banks other than IBRC. I took out that slide because I wanted to hear you. Okay, so then we do the same thing for mortgage defaults, okay? And here it's pretty obvious what you want to do. You want economic value, you've got defaults, it's loss given default. We don't have a lot of things to say here. We just say, okay, we've got 20% default, that's the blended default rate of the mortgage pool, BTL plus principal private residence. All we need to do is impose a loss given default, including restructuring, repossession, forgiveness, delay, all those costs, add it all up, and then just assume from today forward there's no more abnormal defaults, okay? Defaults go back to the normal kind of 3% level. Okay. And that actually is a number which is bigger, but not that much bigger. Okay. Now, we use pretty generous. We're quite optimistic about the loss given default. And really, I think the 40% is probably, you know, in my view, probably the most realistic. So you're talking about burning basically the other half of a typical bank's equity capital. But most of this is provisioned. So if you're matching it to accounting numbers, it doesn't match accounting numbers. This is the value of the asset base being burned by the mortgage default explosion. Okay. So then you have to add them together. You got to subtract out the intersection, that is tracker mortgages which are in default, cut them out, and this is kind of what you're looking at, 4-6% of asset value being eliminated from these two. Obviously, a lot of this is provision, so don't jump and say this goes right to the books. It doesn't. This is the economic loss. However, we miss something, which is in the SME loan book, actually 40% of them are actually property loans, and they're just as inclined toward distress and default as straightforward property, residential property loans. So that you really got to add in. There's another 1%. Okay. So there's another 1%, which is property that's hidden in the SME book. How am I doing? Wow. Okay. I just about franchise value, again, I took out some slides because of the time considerations. You know, this doesn't really link to the accounting value because there's the franchise value of the bank. It can extract excess profits from the economy over the next 20 years to offset these losses, okay? So it doesn't really match up that well to the economic data, okay? Also, positive net interest margin and ECB support is allowing the banks to push this problem out into the future. So I don't, you know, this is not an immediate thing that has to be dealt with. This is a long-term view. They've got like 6% asset value that's been lost. And somehow over the next 20 years, that's got to be in the long run found. Okay? It has to be brought in one way or the other. Okay, so that was pretty good. That was pretty sharp and quick. It's an alternative. I don't claim it does anything. You know, it isn't strictly superior. It's just a different way to look at the problem. This is post-NAMA shocks. We're not looking at development loans. Post-NAMA shocks. It's a pretty big number, these two sets of losses. Not bigger than, you know, if I had asked Kira or Colin before, or Fiona as well, she's probably would have had the same opinion. Would this be the number? People knew this number. It's about 6%. Okay, but a lot of that's provision, but that's what it roughly is. I wasn't that surprised. Are you surprised?
No. One quick question. Can I ask a quick question?
Well, let me just do my last two slides.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, the franchise value comes in. They're going to be able to extract value over the long term from their information networks, ECB support, and also market power as the thing shrinks. I'm not sure, though, that credit quality hasn't permanently been impaired. I suspect credit quality in the Irish market, we know it's very low now, okay? I don't think it's going back to 3%. The default rate is not going to be 20%, but it's not going back to 3%. It's going to be somewhere in the middle there, you know, 5%, 8%. So that's another feature that sort of weighs a little bit on this situation. There's a lot of positives in the Irish economy. I'm actually an optimist. There's a lot of good things happening. The Irish economy is a really strong, small, open economy, okay? The Irish banking sector, we have to think of as not a driver of growth, but over the next 20 years, a drag on other sources of growth.